This is Marloni, Fourier, and Mega.
What if he had guys that were like, all right, instead of, he has guys that completely undermining his coaching and having practices after he has to practice.
We don't even have to look that far
second
back.
Second coach in a row.
We know that Kyrie was running his own practices after Steve Nash wrapped up
practice. I just said that. Hey, Ryan, clip that because she just did a whole thing. You know what it did, right? Yeah, okay.
The Patriots have their first preseason game tomorrow.
Coach Belichick, how do you balance install review with game planning in the preseason?
There's no game plan in the preseason. That's easy. Zero. Close to zero. Not zero, but close to zero.
Do they also have some insurmountable communication problems?
Yeah, I think we're close on a lot of things, so it's just that 2% that we need to fix.
The way they call their protections, it sounds like, and the communication that they use up front has also changed.
You tell me, can a offensive line coach, can that person also be the play caller of an offense during the game?
I think it's a little rough.
Isn't keeping the quarterback upright important?
You remember who hit you the hardest?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Can't remember specifics, but I think getting hit's always fun.
Lou Marloni.
Well, the Red Sox signed Juris Familia.
Who?
Juris?
Christian Fourier.
Yeah, we got stacked those days. Small investment, big dividends in the middle of the year. So that's when I start talking like Trump.
Megan Ottolini.
This is so-and-so has cold sores all over her mouth. It's gross.
It's Marloni, Fourier, and Mego on Boston Sports Original.
No, trolling, trolling is like if you're fishing, you're trolling for something.
No, that's your scrolling.
Do you ever go fishing?
W-E-E-I.
Yes, it's Marloni, Fourier, and Mego. We are down here live, Fenway Park. We're here before every home game in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, which is brought to you by New England Ford Dealers, Ford Trucks, the official truck of the Boston Red Sox. What do you say, Fouye?
Hello, Lou.
Mago?
What's going on?
How are we all doing today? Nice little beautiful day here.
Oh, it is.
Cooled
nice
off a little bit. No one's bitching. It's nice. Nice day.
It's beautiful.
I have something else to bitch about, though, but I feel like I should, like, keep it in-house because I don't want to bring down the vibe.
Do it.
Of the show.
Just
what's wrong?
Do it.
No, I just feel like, listen,
bitching about
as
now.
As a warning, I have a lot of medication going through me right now.
Oh,
I'm going to say this right now. A lot.
I have
uppers
gummies?
And downers.
Ayahuasca.
Okay? I wish it was ayahuasca. Maybe it wouldn't be in so much pain. Gummies would work. Yeah. So I have painkillers and muscle relaxers going at the same time. So the doctor says, listen, this is going to pick you up, and this is going to make you sleep. So if I am constantly going, woo, yee, you'll know exactly what it is. I just hope one of you guys will notice.
So this is sort of like popping a greenie for a game and then taking an Ambien afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time. You got to do it at the same time.
I'm all for playing for the tie. Okay? That's just what you're doing right now. You're trying to play for the tie.
So right now, I feel great.
You do?
Yes.
Well, that's good. That's good. Speaking of playing
ready?
For the tie.
Yeah. No, I'm worried about 4:30.
I'm overexcited.
When 4:45 hits, you're going to be like on the floor.
I am concerned about that. All right, listen. Red Sox lose again. Shocker. Alex Cora is going to join us at 2:30, get his take on the Chris Sale situation and other things, whether they think they're still a playoff team or not. We'll talk to him at 2:30. But I want to start with this because, you know, we're talking about the New England Patriots. I know camp is going on. Yesterday was a better day. We got a big first preseason game tomorrow. I know everyone's all excited. But when we look at this team, and, you know, we don't have to always talk about the positive because I feel like we always talk about the positive. We're so positive here.
Just when a bunch of fan boys and girls.
When you look at this football team, in the end, like to me, what is the Achilles heel of this team going to be? Like, what is the area, personnel-wise? Because I feel like we spent so much time talking about the coaching, the offensive coaching staff. Like, let's focus more on the personnel side of it. What is the Achilles heel of the New England Patriots in 2022?
Who goes first?
Go ahead.
All right, I'll go first. Okay, did you change your pick, by the way?
No, I didn't.
You did not, you're keeping it. All right, so yeah, we can't use offensive coaches.
No.
Because I feel like all of us would say at the end of the day, if they don't
Patricia and Judge.
Patricia and Judge. All right, so I'm going to go with linebackers. I think at the end of the day, the linebackers will be your Achilles heel. I feel like this is another area that we're not talking about, and maybe because they're playing so well and the defense is playing so well because the offense is so crappy right now. So what happens at the last game of the season, the Buffalo Bills run for 174 yards, 6 yards per carry, okay? And that's when you had a bunch of vets. You had Kyle Van Noy, you had Hightower, and you had Jamie Collins. Those three guys are gone. And in the offseason, what you do is you only make one free agent acquisition. You get linebacker Mack Wilson because you kind of trade him for Chase Winovich.
Yeah.
That's it. So other than that, you have a bunch of guys like Raekwon McMillan and Cam McGrone, guys that you are hoping and praying will kind of, you know, just evolve, right? Like they pop. It clicks for them. They're healthy. Not only are they healthy and they're staying on the field, but they understand the defense. They know what you want them to do, and they've kind of integrated themselves into making a difference. Like, the only guy you have is Juwan Bentley. The only guy you can really count on is Juwan Bentley. That's it.
And he's not.
He's a good linebacker, but
like in his heyday and Mayo, like the linebackers they always
have. But he's consistent, and you know, I could say I can sleep at night with Juwan Bentley. I know he's not going to be win every battle, but in the end, like, he'll be where he's supposed to be.
See, I think it's a good group to focus on because what don't we all think going into the draft like this was they're going to come out with a linebacker?
Yes.
They are coming out with
N'Kobe Dean. I was like, isn't that the most obvious choice for
them? First two or three picks. It is going to be a fast. They got to get fast linebacker. Juwan Bentley's there. They have nobody else. And all of a sudden, they don't do it. Then you start hearing, well, McGrone is going to be great. You know, Anthony Jennings is going to pop. And they, Raekwon McMillan. I mean, this is like the depth that they have with Bentley and Mack Wilson. And it's like you almost try to talk yourself, well, the NFL is moving away from linebackers. Really, it's all about box safeties and corners and outside and everything else. But I'm pretty sure you still need linebackers. We only say that because we don't have any.
By the way, keep in mind what the NFL is moving towards when you get to lose Achilles' heel here for the team, because you just said the secondary, right?
Yeah.
What everybody's moving towards.
Tyler, what do you have?
Because it's such a high-flying game.
Yes.
A quote from Matthew Judon just 2 days ago, August 8th. I'm not going to lie. Juwan Bentley is our leader. We all rally behind him. That is who our leader is.
No, he's a captain. Like, no, that's duh. Yeah, no surprise.
That, a player that, who's not like, of elite status or even close to it,
fine.
Who is the leader of a whole
no,
unit.
No, that's, I don't, is that weird to you? He's a starter.
It seems odd to me. I mean, at least with the Celtics, we say Jason Tatum, their best player has got to be their leader with football.
Football, though.
But the reason why, Tyler, is because usually we hear leader of the defense, it's Dante Hightower, who has been here for years.
All-pro, Pro Bowl.
It is Gerard Mayo, who was here for years. So all of a sudden you have what you thought was last year even like your third linebacker, you know, a guy like Juwan Bentley. And all of a sudden now he's propped up to be the leader. And is it because he's a great player? Or just the last guy standing from last year's team?
Yeah, but he doesn't have to be this Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. He needs to be available. He needs to be consistent. He needs to be smart. And he's been here the longest. He's tough. He's vocal. It's not a surprise that he'll be a captain, like whether they vote for him or not. Like, he'll end up being a captain this year along with Devin McCourty or whoever else Bill wants to kind of elevate, knowing that McCourty's probably on his way out. He'll kind of like push those guys up. But as far as positions on the field that we have not given enough attention to, because I've been so hyper-focused on the offensive line and the play callers, it's the linebackers, Mego, for me. That in the end, you'll say, wow, they cannot stop the run. They cannot get off the field on third down because the linebackers couldn't tackle in space.
You're right, Christian. It's a fair point. I think it's a point we were all making in the spring when we were coming off of last season and saw the departures and saw what they did in the draft. So it's a good one. I'm going to go with the offensive line. And I know that this is going to catch a little flack because national outlets are still ranking them as maybe having one of the top 10, top 12 offensive lines in the whole league. But I'm just going off of what has been coming out of training camp so far. And we're at the point now where Mike Reese of ESPN is saying, maybe we can have Scar, you know, just come into practice and organize this a little bit.
Yeah,
get Dante in here. And I'm not worried about David Andrews. I'm not even worried about Cole Strange at this point because I think that he'll find his spot. But I am worried about Trent Brown and Isaiah Wynn playing flippity-flop with their positions. I'm really worried about the depth. By all accounts, Justin Herron has been awful through training camp. And then you have James Ferentz, who was a problem last year, not in a good way. And when Trent Brown goes down, eventually you're going to have Yesser Durant as his backup. And we know these big boys. You called them big fat cows yesterday.
I thought that was pretty mean.
And
I apologize, though.
But they all eventually, one or two of them, is going to go down at different points in the season, right?
Yeah.
So depth is going to come into play. And I know we're not supposed to talk about coaches, but who's behind it? Part-time offensive line coach / offensive coordinator Matt Patricia. So that is where my concern lies right now. I think it could be a major secret under the radar Achilles heel for this team.
I'm going to put a name to this Achilles heel. Okay.
Ooh.
You mentioned a bunch of guys and you're right on all of them, but I'm going to put the Achilles heel as being Cole Strange.
Oh,
specifically to him. I think that I feel like they overdrafted him in the first place. And the fact that they got rid of a starter in Shaq Mason,
good one,
who was already kind of established and didn't have to worry about that. You can sleep at night with him, to putting a rookie in there from a small school. Yes, I do think he'll eventually figure it out. But to begin with, I think he struggles. I don't think you know how to manage him. And I think he ends up being a great player in the long run. But for the first year, he's an Achilles heel.
Yeah, listen, offensive line so far, the way they're looking at it, yeah, it struggles. I mean, and you question the depth, I think it's fair, Mago, because I think that is a big concern. It all kind of starts there, right? If your offensive line's not good, then all of a sudden your quarterback has no time and your running game isn't what you think it is. So that has to be a good unit, and if it's an Achilles heel, then you have serious, serious problems. I think the obvious glaring one is corner, is cornerback. You know, when you're looking at a depth chart of like Terrence Mitchell and Jalen Mills and Jonathan Jones in the slot. Now, it talks about Jonathan Jones sliding out, you know, playing on the outside, using his speed. We'll see what happens there. There's a reason why people are so high, I think, in, you know, Marcus Jones, Jack Jones, the rookies. It's because they need him to be.
And
because
they don't know what they are yet.
Yeah.
They can't point to them and say, well, this guy's washed.
Yeah, and because they need him to be. You're searching. It's sort of like when we kept talking about who's the tight end coach. I keep forgetting his name.
Nick Kelly.
Nick, yeah. So it was like
Andy Hart's chosen one.
Yeah, he's got to be the offensive coordinator because we know the other options, right? So that's why we're looking at Jack Jones and Marcus Jones, saying one of these two got to pop because Juwan Williams obviously was a waste of a second round pick. You know, Malcolm Butler, you haven't really heard great things about him. He hasn't been a good football player in 3 years. So I think it's obvious. I think it's corner. And even though it keeps talking about, oh, they're just going to play zone. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're still going to be able to communicate, be there, and actually defend, even in zone, be able to cover guys in zone. It's not like they got an awful secondary. Whatever, they're just going to play zone. It's like defense in basketball. Just play zone, no big deal.
It's just incredible to look at where we were at this point last year, where we were talking about, okay, how long is like Stephon Gilmore going to hold out on whatever, you know, injury in quotations he was still dealing with there, which was really the contract dispute. And then you have J.C. Jackson on the other side and going, is J.C. really a lockdown corner?
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, Jalen Mills was a complete afterthought at this point, even though he was a free agent that they brought in at this point last year. Now Jalen Mills is your number one corner on a Bill Belichick team. That is just so out of character for the way that he's built these elite defenses up to this point. It is just, I think that you have a really strong point there because Jalen Mills is your number one corner. I don't care if you're playing zone or man or whatever. It's just uncharacteristic.
Every great team always has a number one corner for Bill.
Oh, yeah.
They don't.
Every Super Bowl champion team.
They don't have them. I don't know if they got a number two corner.
No, I don't think they do either, because this is what stands out to me just by having this conversation with you guys. When, you know, we spent like a lot of the offseason just kind of ripping the skill position players on the Patriots, right? Oh, they're not good enough. They don't have a number one. They don't have this. They don't have that. But if you remove the ability to say, hey, the offensive line, like the coaches, the offensive coordinator would be your Achilles heel, therefore their offense is going to suck. Like, you would sit there and go, look, they have good players on their offense. They have good tight ends. They have good wide receivers. They have great backs. So just with that, they should be able to do damage. But when you add in the fact that you have novices and former head coaches and defensive linebacker coaches and special team coaches coaching your offense by committee, divide and conquer, it really brings them down, doesn't it? It, like, really lowers what you think of them. Because if I allowed you to use offensive, coaches –
When we sat down and talked about this, we said we cannot include – this has to be roster-based. Because if we bring the coaches into it, we will go back into the crazy roundabout that we find ourselves stuck in all the time, talking about, oh, my God, how is this the offensive coach?
Yeah. Which would really anger – it would make me angry if I'm a player. But I'm looking around the room going, wow, this guy's pretty good. This guy's good. That guy's good. These guys should never hold us back. These coaches, they should not hold us back. Mm-hmm. But yet here we are because we want our new system.
Yeah, and it's probably
we don't like the old system. They don't want to learn the old one.
Which is the biggest surprise. I think that's why a lot of people are so-called, you know, panicking right now, is because we all felt like this offensive unit, year two, was going to have a better understanding of the system. Well, they changed the system. And the strength of your team really should be the offense. Whether you think it's going to be elite or not, even if it's just going to be good or above average, you still thought it was going to be the strength. And they haven't looked really good here so far. All right, listen, we're down here at the Ford Clubhouse. We are every single day for the Red Sox home games, I would say, and it's a Wednesday. So we're going to talk to the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, at 2:30, get his thoughts on what has been going on here recently with this baseball team. But when we come back, sticking with the Patriots, one of the breakout stars that we all kind of thought would be the guy this year at wide receiver is having a very quiet camp. I'll tell you who that is. It's next.
Now back to Maloney, Fourier, and Mego on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Come on, babe. Hey, that's a good dog.
All right, so going in here, year two for one Mac Jones and a lot of these free agents that signed last offseason. I think one of the names that a lot of people kept bringing up with as far as potential to be a number one guy, a guy that could have a breakout year this year, was one Kendrick Bourne. And I was just looking at Mark Daniels. He tweeted out, reception leaders with Mac Jones through 11 days of camp. And Jacoby Myers has got 28. Jonnu Smith, 19. Hunter Henry, 17. Damian Harris, 16. Nelson Aguilar, 12. Devontae Parker, 12. Ramondre Stevenson, 9. And tied with Ty Montgomery with 8 is Kendrick Bourne. Tyquan Thornton's got 6. Trey Nixon, 5. But Kendrick Bourne with 8. And it's been kind of like under the radar. No one's really talking. You heard like Tyquan Thornton having big days. Obviously, guys like Aguilar actually having some big days. Devontae Parker having big days. You haven't really heard much of Kendrick Bourne. Like, is this going to be a breakout year for this guy? Didn't we think he's one of the most electric guys? If you get the ball in his hands, the best playmaker they have? And am I reading too much into these receptions so far the first few weeks of camp?
Wow. Quick question. Is this from 7s and 11s?
You have to ask Mark.
Okay, I'm just trying to get context.
I don't know.
I would say,
or is it
yes.
just
overall
say,
with Mark?
Is it just 11?
11 days of training camp? You only have. I feel like that's unbelievably low. He should get that in one day. One day.
Jacoby Myers has 28.
That doesn't surprise me.
Okay, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, 19, 17, and then Aguilar Parker, 12, and then Bourne's down at 8.
So basically, okay, just looking at this, so focus on boots and nakeds. Your second and third leading receivers are your tight ends.
I always like focusing on Nate being naked with boots.
Okay, naked with boots on is a totally different discussion that we should have as a podcast.
But no
okay?
socks. No but socks,
no,
right?
Definitely no socks. No. All no. oiled up with Vaseline. Then we're talking. Now you got business. Okay. Jacoby Myers is going to be...
Look on Mago's face.
I know. I was trying to stay focused. So Jacoby Myers at 28, he's going to be your leading receiver.
But didn't we think Kendrick Bourne should be, could be, will be?
Why did we think that? Because Kendrick Bourne came out and said that he wants to get 1,000
yards? No, because I think he's got he's the best playmaker they have.
Brian Barrett's been pushing it. He's saying, oh, well, just extrapolate his 78% catch percentage and he'll have 1,000 yards this year.
But 50 catches, 800-something yards, put the ball in his hands, let him make your plays. He's the best playmaker you have as far as getting the ball in someone's hands and going.
When it's all said and done, who do you think I guess we'll do it. Like, do you think the leading receiver is going to be Jacoby Myers?
Probably, yes.
I think it is.
Hasn't Jacoby been the volume catch guy for
There's always one guy that is your go-to volume guy, third and
but
two,
here's the
just
thing.
Get 3 yards.
Christian, I agree. So
but
maybe,
not a lot of yards, but a lot of catches.
Maybe your lead wide receiver, I don't know. Jacoby Myers, if he stays healthy, maybe he's an 80 reception guy. Something like that, right? But I thought like 50, 55 from Bourne. Bourne might have more yards than Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, but Bourne is also a yak guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think some of this might be if he's targeting 1,000 yards, which I think that that Patriots camp has tried to get him to scale back from that goal and talking about that. But if that is ultimately like what he's targeting, then a lot of that, it's going to be spread out. Like, I don't think that you can look at Kendrick Bourne being targeted on or only having 8 catches as that's going to affect his play, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, see, when I see this, it confirms that Jacoby Myers is still your number one option. That's not going to change. Like, that relationship, that trust is not going to leave Mac. He relies on that.
He's your dependable dog.
So I would like to know, how many times have they gone to Kendrick Bourne, and how many times did it fail? Like, does he have the most targets and the least amount of receptions? I mean, are they forcing the issue? Hey, we gotta make this work.
Let me
we gotta
ask
make
you,
it work.
Following all the guys covering this team, how many times have they written about Kendrick Bourne?
A lot.
On a day. On a practice.
Oh, I would say I haven't seen it once.
I saw 2 last week.
What did they say?
Why isn't he any good?
About Kendrick Bourne. His goals this season.
No. I'm talking about practice. I don't care about goals. I don't care about anything. Yeah. I'm talking about down in practice.
Devontae Parker.
Kendrick Bourne just burned Jalen Mills, and he made a great catch.
Flip it around on its head, isn't that maybe a good thing? Because what they're writing about so far out of practice on the offense is how much they suck.
No, I'm still seeing Tyquan Thornton is burning Jalen Mills, is burning Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, but that's more like
unstoppable in the red zone.
I think that's more because it's surprising. Because we all knew that Tyquan Thornton, like, it's just more of a story to me. Because Tyquan Thornton, if we're going to bring him up, is that, we all knew he had separation, but I don't know if people knew he was this explosive off the line.
I haven't seen one person write anything
about
on
how
what
good
Kendrick Bourne has done in practice, or
has he even
took over possession, or had a couple good catches.
But
or
I also
nothing. It's like he's not even here
playing that game. I haven't seen the flip side of it. Of God, Kendrick's dropping everything. Kendrick looks lost. What happened to Kendrick this year?
But it should be an area of focus, right? It should be like, they should be sitting there going, all right, like Devontae Parker, all right, those first 2 days of practices, red zone stuff in pads, like he was the star.
Uncoverable.
Uncoverable. No one could guard him. All right, well, I feel like things have changed since then.
It's I think this is overall that the offense is like so freaking crappy. Then what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to say, like, the offense was really crappy, but Kendrick Bourne had 2 catches. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it's been, right?
Do you think these offensive coaches, I'm just going to call them these offensive coaches because I'm not going to name them.
These offensive coaches.
Yeah, I'm not going to name them by name because I'm not sure who's really in charge. Let's say the offensive coaches. Do you think they know, they have much experience about, like, listen, I have some great ideas on how to get Kendrick Bourne involved. Like, Deebo Samuel type stuff. Like, here's Deebo Samuel who... Like, listen, they're going to make him run the ball. They're going to do whatever they can to put the ball in his hands because he's so, like, electric. And
didn't a lot of people think that Kendrick Bourne was your version of that? It's not Deebo Samuel, but we talked about this wide receiver in the offseason, this group, and it was like they don't have any number ones. You know, they have a bunch of twos and some threes, and it's like, well, no, they have a number one. It's Kendrick Bourne. They just got to get him the ball more. He had 50 catches, 800 yards. If he gets 70, 75 catches, he's over 1,000. He should be the number one. He's the most electric, even at the end of the year. For this football team, it was like, yeah, possession, 3rd and 6, you're going to go to Jacoby Myers. But, you know, looking for a big play, quick little slant, get it to Kendrick Bourne, let him try to run the ball 30, 40 yards. Like, that's your big play guy in this offense. And I think we expect him to be a big part of it. Not that, so that's why I don't know if we're overreacting by what we've seen so far, but it doesn't seem like he has been.
I think Kendrick jumped out to a lot of people because of the Dallas game last year, because of the catch that he made towards the end of that. And he had pretty consistent connection with Mac throughout. So I think everybody was like looking at anything. So they were like, okay, it's Kendrick Bourne and it's Hunter Henry. And those are the playmakers. And they're both going to make even more of a jump this year. But I'm not sure that I ever got on the wagon of saying that Kendrick Bourne is their number one. Like, I still feel strongly that I don't think they have a number one receiver. Like, I don't think that they have any particular receiver in this core that separates himself so much from the other guys.
No,
like,
don't.
I maintain it's still kind of like a flat receiver by committee type thing.
Tyler?
The numbers kind of tell you, and tell me if this is a fair assumption, this is still the dink and dunk offense we saw. Even though it's completely changed system-wise, a completely new system from year one with Mac Jones, the dink and dunk results, Jacoby Myers, Johnny Smith, Hunter Henry, Damian Harris, Nelson Agholor, these are 5 to 7 yard completions, right, Fourier? It's nothing new. Your best athletes are not getting the ball, and Kendrick Bourne, Tyquan Thornton has 6 receiving, 6 catches. It's just a little bit different.
And here comes the, here comes.
All right, it's Wednesday. We're going to bring in our guy, Alex Cora. Don't call him. Alex, call me Skip. Alex Cora is brought to you by Arbella Insurance.
I would like that nickname.
Massachusetts. Massachusetts taking down New Hampshire to go to the finals. You were pointing that out. You like that?
Yeah, that's good.
Little League World Series?
We saw there's a player there. The third baseman.
You got your eye on him?
Number 99.
I scouting him or what?
What are you doing?
Favorite player, Alex Verdugo. I'm like, wow.
For Massachusetts?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Why do you give that face when he says the favorite player is Alex Verdugo? Why do you look at him like, what's wrong with you?
We're just making fun of him in the clubhouse just now.
Just now.
Wait, do you have, like,
maybe
I know you hate
that. You paid that kid off to say it?
Which one?
Didn't you just say a kid up there so that his favorite player was Alex Verdugo?
Yeah, number 99.
You think Verdugo maybe paid him off a little bit?
Family friend.
Probably gave him some necklaces or
something. So, Alex, you hate Skip. Like, do you have a nickname? Did you have one?
No.
AC, that's AC, it. That's like, just it, your initials.
Yeah, AC.
I don't know if that can quantify as a nickname.
Well, why not?
Well, actually.
And should that be the
actually,
case? Should
Alex,
we allow that?
Alex is hopefully, I mean. No, I'm not.
Where are you going?
My real name is Jose Alexander.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you go. Alex. All right, so Jose Cora's here with us right now. take me to Saturday night. I know you guys play in Kansas City. Is it before the game when you get the phone call? Is it after the game? In the middle of the game, we get the phone call that Chris Sale has broken his wrist.
It was actually...
And what was your reaction?
Before, like, poor kid. That's what I said. So I talked to Brad Pierce. Right after Chris played catch with him, they went to BC. They were working out there, and I spoke to him, and he sounded very excited. Like this might happen for us. You know, like
you look good.
Like no pain, probably no changeup when he came. You know, like fastball slider, but he looked great just playing catch. You know, and this is Brad, who's been in the game forever, and he's like, this might happen for us, and then. I got a text from Haim, And he's like, call me. And
Like, that's always bad.
And I call him.
Call me.
With no information, just call like me.
Midday.
So Mike Gridman was there with us talking about, no, this is before the game. Yeah. We're talking about transactions, you know, but then Haim is like, have you talked to group? I'm like, yeah, you know, like, we're set with the roster. He's like, no, call me. And I call him. He's like, I got bad news. And I was like, what happened now? I mean, I'm thinking about me. I'm like, like, come on. Something happened here?
Did you fire me?
No.
Okay.
More. I was like, I went back to like 2020, you know, like, what happened here? Like,
yeah.
Like, something came out or something is acute, but whatever. And he tells me that. And I was like, oh, no way. You know, like, it's unreal. You know, I was in shock.
So, okay. So we had like, obviously the fractured pinky. We saw that against the Yankees and the Tommy John, but there's been a series of just some of the flukiest, most random things, right? I know this year he took a couple weeks off in the middle of his rehab. It's personal. It is what it is. In the off season, fractures his rib, throwing a baseball, and then this with his wrist. You know how this city goes. Do you understand like the speculation of some people saying, is it random or are those really the reasons that he got? Did he really fall off his bike? Did he punch a wall? Did he really break a rib playing a baseball? Did he do it doing something else stupid?
No. 100%. I can tell you that what we're saying is the
truth. So it's just awful the luck then.
It's just, yeah. I mean, you hate to play with faith and all that stuff, you know, but when I told one of the players, he's like, Alex, you know, and the man, the guy literally goes, God, forgive me for this one. Either he gets very close to the men upstairs or we send him to Haiti or something like that, to a witch doctor or something, you know. And it's like, like, you know, it's just one of those that, and for me personally, the way he is and how bad he wanted it, you know, like he really wanted to be part of this. Just in spring training, how down he was when he told us what happened. And then the New Year thing was, you know, that was, I mean, for me, I was like, man, you know, like you see him pitching and, okay, you envision what he can do and that happened. And this one, although he wasn't sure that he was going to come back, but, you know, that phone call in the morning and that text and phone call in the afternoon, it was like night and day. So it's bad for him, you know, and he's in a good place mentally, which is very important. And he's ready to attack the offseason the right way and be ready for next year.
So I want to get your comment on an article that Alex Speer wrote a couple of days ago when, you know, just paraphrasing here, when he talked to some people in the clubhouse and also front office folks about how that when it is regard to the, you know, trade deadline and all the moves that were made, the one word that everyone was using was confusion and how nobody really knew what the plan was. Are you comfortable with what the plan is? And do you know what the plan is? Do you know what the plan is, and are you comfortable with it? That's a two-part question.
I know what the plan is, and we've been consistent talking about getting better for this year or the present and obviously getting better for the future. And I know people think about Christian Vasquez, two prospects, Tommy Pham, Eric Hosmer, Jake Diekman for Reese. If you look at the team now,
you're dying.
Water.
It's all right.
I'd share mine with you, but
you see, I learned the mute button when I media. Worked at ESPN.
It's true,
media
bro.
If you look at the offense, although, you know, we haven't scored as many runs as we wish, I think the lineup is better in a sense that there's a different approach with Haas and with Tommy. You know, it's control the strike zone. More pitches, similar to Kyle last year in a sense, but I think Tommy in the leadoff spot is going to do that, and Haas, you saw it right away, 0-2 count, 9-pitch walk. Defensively, Hosmer is going to bring, you know, a true first baseman. And, you know, we talk about it during the season, and we have Frenchie playing there a lot more than Bobby. Bobby has struggled defensively for a year and a half, and having Haas at first is going to help, and we need a catcher, so we got Reese. You know, it's one of those that I know from afar, everybody's like, oh, Christian was here, the heart of the team, all that, he's been here. But, you know, sometimes you got to make tough decisions. Like I've been telling everybody, you know, Jorge Lopez and Mancini got traded from the Orioles, and they're still winning ball games. They're still playing hard. Yes. They're still scoring runs, and they're half game from the wild card. So, hey, is it, you know, is it how you feel in the clubhouse, how you play on the field. And, you know, the Orioles are doing the total opposite of what we did in Kansas City. You know, they're playing good baseball. They're winning games. We didn't win games in Kansas City.
So how concerning, though, is it just as a manager running the team? I'm not sure if you try to control the narrative, but when other people inside the, you know, the facility, call it Fenway Park or whatever, either clubhouse or, you know, front office, are, I feel like they're openly questioning the moves and making it public, not attaching their name to it, almost undermining what you guys are trying to achieve.
I mean, nothing against Alex, but that's how he works, right? I respect Alex. I get it. He has a job to do to inform and to take the pulse of the clubhouse or Fenway, whatever. But I like articles with names. I like that. You know, when somebody says that they're disappointed or they're confused, I like names right behind that, you know. And like I said, Alex is a great reporter. He's done an amazing job throughout the years. But articles like that, for me, it doesn't do much. You know, like, hey, yeah, people, it might be Angel from Gate D, that, you know, he's in Fenway. He
true.
Doesn't agree. He doesn't
one
agree
of my sources.
He's in between here. He's in Fenway. So that's the way I see it.
But, okay, but I guess, and I'll end with this, is that, but there is a unified belief in the plan moving forward, and everybody is on board.
I mean, everybody's on board. Okay. You know, we're trying to win this year. We haven't played. I mean, Kansas City was tough. You know, that first game, tie game in the seventh, we didn't win that game. Of course, we had a tough one with Darwin's in there. Then the walk-off against Witt on Saturday, that was tough too. And then on Sunday, they just, you know, hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Going back to Eric Hosmer, you were talking about him before Christian started bullying you over here to my right.
He would never let me bully him. Are you kidding me? No chance.
Hosmer obviously has the knee contusion. Is he out tonight? Do you expect him to be back tonight or tomorrow? What's the deal with him there?
Out tonight. Probably he'll be back tomorrow. I just saw him in the training room. A lot of progress. He thought it was going to be worse. So he's moving better, but not ready to play tonight.
So you mentioned the Orioles playing good baseball, and we know how it works. The young guys, and they're still playing for their careers, and you trade away a guy they don't know any better because they're so young. You do have some veterans here who know better. And, you know, like when they look at some of the moves, maybe they're disappointed. A couple years in a row now, I feel like right after the deadline, maybe there's some disappointment. How do you as a manager get that point across? We still have 55 games to go. Even if you're not happy, because it looks like 2 years in a row, like that week afterwards, and hopefully it doesn't go 2 weeks, where the play is sort of maybe lost focus or not winning baseball.
We beat Houston 2 out of 3, right?
Before the deadline.
No, it was during the day of, right?
But the next morning you woke up and said, that's it?
No, we went 2 out of 3. And then we went to Kansas City and we didn't play well.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have meetings. We talk about it.
You're dying right now. Get some water.
See, it's the questioning that's getting to him. Finally.
No, he's like Bill.
You got me. You got me right now.
Now he's Bill.
You got me finally. No. But you talk to the players, and they understand. And at the end of the day, our job is to show up every day and try to win every game. Every game you play. Regardless of the results that night, you show up the next day, you prepare, and you go. And lack of preparation, no. I do feel in Kansas City, when the long innings happens, it's not that we quit, but it was 98 and long innings, and we were a little bit down. Yesterday was great. I think the effort level was amazing. The stadium, although a lot of fans from the Braves, but they travel, you know, they're world champs. But the atmosphere was really good, and I think the effort was great. So put another good game tonight, win it, and then, you know, we got Baltimore tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
One game series.
Big week, big game.
Yeah.
I got a squirrel moment real quick. By any chance, you see everything. Did you happen to see the guy, was it Castro or something like that, from the Pirates that slid into third and his cell phone fell out of his pocket?
Technology.
It should be
technology.
Right? I don't know. Not allowed to have phones, period.
So you heard this story,
right? Your brother's
right?
Not at third anymore.
Huh?
Your brother's not third there.
Oh, man, we're with the Mets.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, we're with the Mets. The third base coach looked so upset that he's about to hand me this phone right now. What would you do if your player's playing with his phone?
You heard what happened, the story, right?
No.
Was it in the first inning?
I'm not sure.
So I hope it's in the first inning. If not, he's not telling the truth. He said that he had his cell phone, you know, before the game. He was walking around, boom, boom, boom. Then he went out to stretch, and he forgot that he had the phone on. He grabbed his pad, his sliding pad, and he put it in the pocket. Yeah.
Fourth inning? What do you do?
So he played, you see, like that one, I don't get.
Yeah.
He said that. He said that Before the game, he had the phone, and all, so he played four innings with the phone.
Yeah.
He's right, though. The third base coach was like, I don't want to touch that thing.
The guy's handing him his phone. He's like, I can't believe you're doing this.
So my brother, when he's coaching third, he does his thing, like, you know, the guy gets to third, and he sees the baseball, and he points at it all the time, you know. Like, you're the runner, he's like, look at it. I imagine Joey when if he was coaching the – if he was coaching the Pirates and he sees the phone right there, he might point at it and step on it right there. I mean, like,
that's
a tough one, no, right there, right?
Yeah, that you, yeah,
you might get fined.
I don't think you can do that. You should do that. Let me ask you about Jerry Duran. He had a tough day out in Kansas City. And at twilight, it happens, son. It happens. It's just that it happened to him. Like, if it happened to Jackie, we'd be like, okay, whatever. But it's really more of just a young kid struggling, because I'm saying it's hard for, like, regular fans to just watch a game and actually see an outfielder struggle with routes. You know, you see the replays. You're like, why is he going in and then back? Why is he going over and then in? Like, how do you work at that? I'm not used to seeing somebody work at that at this level. It's usually done lower level.
It's not about defending guys or whatever, but you know who had the best first step last year? You know, first step
Kike.
In the outfield, yeah. Who had the worst routes?
Kike.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And he made
him
catch
so good? What,
he just he gets going. He just gets going as an infielder. You know, I think his pre-pitch is similar to us. You know, like, it was right on contact. Mm-hmm. Well, right before contact, right? In the outfield, some of them, they delayed their first step so they can see it and go. So Kike is just – he does it the same way in the outfield, and sometimes he just goes and, you know, with the first step gets him going – and then he can, like, reroute it. Then he can adjust. And that's what we're trying to do with Jaron. Like, at one point this season, his first step was probably one of the worst in the big leagues. And now he's actually rating up there with Kike and Jackie. It's because we told him, you know what, just do it like you're stealing bases. You know, just get moving. Just get moving.
Yeah.
Now, he has to work on stuff. We know that. But he's gotten better, obviously. On Sunday, it was so tough because – you know, the one in the wall, right at the end, he lost it. Then that happened, and then it just happened that every ball was going to center field. The diving play, and that one, I'm glad that he made that catch. It was a knuckler. You know, he squared off, and the ball was knuckling, and he made a great play. But
he might have jumped the wall and hung out with the fans if he missed that.
Oh, man. It's just when they kept hitting it, I was like, you know, I hope he doesn't get in the zone, and I hope he makes a play. We had a conversation. I thought he was really good with the media that night, you know, accountable. I'm going to keep working hard. He had a good game yesterday.
Yeah.
Swing the bat better. One of the things that we don't talk about often, and that's probably on me, you know, lineup construction. The other day I was thinking, I'm like, you know what? This kid, he comes from AAA with all the hype, you know, the speed and all that stuff. He's still a rookie. And you tell me how many rookies are leading off at the big league level.
So you move him to nine.
So you know what? You're gonna hit ninth, relax, hit the ball on the ground, do your thing. And so far, I think at bats-wise, the last three or four days, I've been better.
All right.
That's cool,
Alex, appreciate it. Thanks for swinging by. Good seeing you. Good luck tonight. You know, I'm going to be like a few sections over. I'm not sitting
you?
Down. Yeah, tight. Not like Ortiz. I'm not going to talk your ear off. I'll be a few sections away from you tonight.
Here, look at
you
my
got
phone.
My tickets.
Huh?
My tickets?
No. Close. Couple over from you, but I'll be throwing popcorn at you all day. All right, listen, good luck
Thank
tonight,
you.
Man.
Thanks Appreciate
for
it. Thank
by.
You.
All right, there you go. Alex Cora joining us here on a Wednesday. And if I can pull this up, I know he's brought to you by Shaw's, the official supermarket of the Red Sox WEEI Network.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go, wherever you go. Just download the Odyssey app.
Now back to Merloni, Fourier, and Mego on WEEI.
So I want to get your comment on an article that Alex Spear wrote a couple of days ago when, you know, just paraphrasing here, when he talked to some people in the clubhouse and also front office folks about how that when it is regard to the, you know, trade deadline and all the moves that were made, the one word that everyone was using was confusion and how nobody really knew what the plan was. Are you comfortable with what the plan is?
I know what the plan is, and we've been consistent talking about getting better for this year or the present and obviously getting better for the future.
There it is. Alex Cora after the Wiggy question.
Stop.
Well, that thing took 45 seconds.
Wait a second. That's not
and
a
we understand.
It's time for a commercial break now.
We understand because you're on drugs.
Right. Yes.
You got a pass because you're on drugs.
Yes, I have no concept of time. However, like, that was not a Wiggy question.
Ryan, how long was that?
Ryan?
Ryan had to edit it.
Guess, yeah, 30,
I
36?
It down. It's at least 30 seconds.
Well, no, but that wasn't even the one I wanted to come back with. This is the follow-up. The third question, actually, I asked, which was really short and quick.
Not the follow-up, but the
and
third one.
Nobody really knew what the plan was.
That one.
Are you comfortable with what the plan is? And do
That's
you know
it.
What the plan
wow.
is? Do you know what the plan is, and are you comfortable
stop
with
stop talking, Fourier! Shut up!
Oh. That's what you wanted.
Shut up.
The cut I just played. That's what you wanted.
That's
well, he was
that's
looking
the shining
at
example.
He was looking at me like I was crazy. I was like, well, let me make sure I kind of
no.
what I want out of you.
What you want?
In person, I think
you get what you want.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't always get what you want.
Fine, whatever.
So I know Alex answers these questions, and it's kind of like it's like the value of him too. If you ask me, like just how he handles the media. You say like he looked at you like I think he looked at you like. How the hell do you think I'm going to answer this question?
Yeah.
Like, I know.
And then he's going to turn around and say, yeah, of course, we're all on the same page. We all know what the plan is. And it's like, because I'm not so sure he does. I don't think anyone really does. Like, and he's saying, yeah, we're going to get better this year. We're going to get better next year. And it's like, okay, but how's the plan working?
He found a nice little pocket to get into.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I don't like stories that have
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Focus. I mean, come on, Alex Spear, he's hooked up.
Well,
you
know
he's
know
not just talking to like, an angel over
his angel and like
come
section
on.
10.
The like, thing is, on. When people say this all the time, and I know Alex saying it, whatever, because I think he's, like you said, I think he saw a nice little avenue to go rather than maybe answer the question truthfully. And people call in all the time saying, oh, I don't like that article. It's anonymous sources. You got to know how it works. You're a reporter, Mego. You're a columnist.
I
reporter.
Once
he was.
So it's like sometimes the only way you're going to get truth. Right? Mm. Is if it's like anonymous source a lot of times. Okay, it's on the record. Well, if it's on the record, I'm going to give you this line. Okay, it's off the record. Okay, now I'll tell you really what the hell's going on. Or I'm going to put your name in the article. Well, then you ain't going to get a quote from me.
Right.
Well, I'm going to take your name out of it and say anonymous source. Fine, I'll tell you what's going on. Like, that's the only way sometimes you get the answers.
Especially in pro sports, but with someone like Alex Spear working for the Boston Globe, he's established enough. And Alex Cora, he just acknowledged this, but he's established enough of a reputation, enough of a record
yeah.
to show that he's not just going over and talking to whoever's slinging well, popcorn in the
Some stand. Of the sources he used were front office personnel. Mm-hmm. So do you think the assistant to the assistant of Heim Bloom wants his name on there and saying, we're all confused, we don't know the plan, we were questioning it when the season started, we didn't know what the hell happened the next day? Like, you think that guy's going to put his name on it?
Or with Tomasi reporting, the clubhouse is frustrated with the lack of moves. What is he going to say, Xander Bogaerts? It tells me that he's, I mean, I guess he could have if he wanted to burn him.
Part of that, though, is that, to be honest with you, those guys aren't afraid. Because Xander went out publicly and said we needed help.
That's
and
true.
And was disappointed. You heard him the neck when they traded Vasky. Like, JD, I think Devers, when he's out in Houston, like, he said he's really sad that these guys are gone. Vasky is gone. He's disappointed. Like, those players weren't afraid to put their name on and actually say it.
Those are money-made employees, whereas the assistant to the assistant might be relying on $75,000 from the Red Sox and insurance benefits.
He's not going to say, yeah, sure, put my name on that thing.
Yeah,
right?
Or scout or whatever.
No, that ain't going to happen. All right, so the Red Sox back in action tonight. Sox Braves at the drop in one last night in 12. Just an ugly game. They sort of just run out of talent at some point, especially when you get in the extras. Kind of what they did in April. Coming up next, Don Sweeney. We'll talk a little Bruins. Spoke today about the David Krejci signing and the direction of this team, as well as David Krejci a couple days ago, a couple of things I want to get in that he had said as well. We'll talk some Bruins. It's next.